B-Pod Studios.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, 4 o'clock hour, Mike Bisignelli Show, 97.5 The Fanatic, the 4 o'clock hour, brought to us by Landis Block, your one-stop shop to create a jaw-dropping outdoor paradise online at landisbc.com. And of course, Landis brings us our regular Friday guest, 4 to 5 every Friday on the Mike Bisignelli Show, the great number 36, Brian Westbrook. Hello, Brian Westbrook.
Good afternoon, Michael. How are you doing, Michael?
I'm doing good. Now, Tyrone was telling me about this picture you posted yesterday where you got the kids, you're just hanging by the lake. Yeah, serene.
We're just trying to get some peacefulness out here these days. Uh-huh. You know, a lot's going on, and the world is crazy right now, and I certainly understand why it's crazy and what's going on, but every now and then you just need some rest and you need some relaxation. And so yesterday I took the kids for a little ride around the pond just to relax and everything, allowed them to go fishing just a bit. And so we were able to catch a few bass, a couple catfish and some bluegill. And so we enjoyed
ourselves. Oh, that is, let me ask you a question. You're there now. I mean, you've been there for a while now. You're kind of used to life there. I mean, you're used to yourself just living at the Westbrook farm now with the children.
There's no doubt about it. Me and my wife were just talking about it the other day about building another house there on the farm and just staying there. Unfortunately for me, you know, the TV stuff up in New York is pretty good and things are going well up there. And so we got to kind of go back and forth. But we love the farm life. My wife is enjoying riding and she's now jumping on her horse and everything every single day. And so it's been good. It's going to be hard for us to go back, I can tell you.
This is like Yellowstone in real life. Do you watch Yellowstone?
I love Yellowstone. Uh-huh. I love Yellowstone.
Uh-huh.
One of my favorite shows. Dad, have you ever seen the other show by the same director? It's called The Last Cowboy. Have you ever seen that?
No, it's Taylor Sheridan. No, I haven't seen that.
Taylor Sheridan.
I've heard about it though.
Yeah, it's more of a documentary style show about a specific sport called reining, which I have a few reining horses as well. But yeah, I love Yellowstone. It's a good show. I know they have a new season coming up.
It's starting Sunday. Now, let me ask you these horses, because there's one. You have horses. Now, one of those horses, like in Yellowstone, he wanted to buy a horse, and the one was $5 million. What's it called? Well, the horse goes real fast, and then it stops by just digging its back legs in the dirt.
Right.
What is that kind of horse?
That discipline is called reining.
Reining. Okay.
Yeah, that's reining. So that's the type of horses that I have here at the farm. That's the type of horses that we're breeding as well. And so it's a performance horse type of sport. It's fun. A lot of people in the Western world kind of do it. That's what the whole show and the premise of Yellowstone is all about. But that guy, Taylor Sheridan, who is the executive producer of that show, he's a judge. He's a reigning judge. He also participates in the reigning competitions. And so it's pretty interesting to watch.
So you raise these reigning horses and you put them in competitions to win some cash.
That's right.
Nice.
A couple of dollars and we sell them and, you know, all those types of things. So yeah, it's fun. It's a different type of expense. It's hopefully we can sell them and make some money. We've done that a few times and so we continue to do it.
So if you develop a reigning horse, first of all, do you get on that horse and do that? And do you rein with the horse?
I do.
You do?
I don't go out and compete. I'm trying to kind of leave it to all the other guys, the trainers that we have on staff and things like that. But so we allow them to go out in there and compete. But I stand on the rail and go out there and cheer them on and make sure that all of our money that we're spending is put to good use as these guys go out there and compete.
That's awesome, man. Tyrone, you guys see this reining thing. These horses are like purebred horses, and they go like a million miles an hour, and all of a sudden, the cowboy pulls back the reins, and they stop by sliding their back hoofs in the ground. They slide to second base on a pop-up slide.
I've seen that in like a movie.
Yeah, and then they twirl around. You got them twirling. That's the kind of horse that he's raising. Now the stud fee on a good one. You produce a good one. That stud fee is where the money comes from, right, Brian?
Well, it is, but it's a lot different than racehorses. So racehorses, I'm talking about some of the best ones. Their stud fees are $250,000, $500,000. These horses, these reining horses, are in a whole different class. I'm talking about some of the best ones are only about $5,000 for the stud fee. So it's a little bit cheaper for that.
That's cool. I can see you with the cowboy hat on and that saddle reining with these horses.
It's funny you should mention the cowboy hat and the cowboy boots. Today, Brian decided to tell his wife that he should be allowed to go outside in a white wife beater undershirt, shorts, cowboy boots, and a cowboy hat, and his wife said no.
It's jorts too. Jean shorts.
Jean shorts. Cowboy boots. The white wife beater.
I'll send you the picture right now, Mike.
And the hat, and Brian put this on social media.
Oh, what's that look, Brian? What's that about? That look.
Well, listen. First of all, we were having an argument, not even about my clothing. And so at that point, I was like, well, listen, if you want to argue with me, then we're going to the grocery store, and this is what I'm going to wear. The jeans those jean shorts used to be my actual jeans. And because she made me upset, I cut them off. I had my little tank top shirt on. I had my cowboy boots. And now the whole goal of that outfit was to embarrass her as we walk around the grocery store. And so, yeah, that's what she gets.
Well, how about if somebody goes, wait, are you Brian Westbrook, the NFL running back? What do you mean embarrass her?
I just sent you the picture. Check your phone, Mike.
Yeah, for the listeners and the viewers, 97.5 The Fanatics Twitter page, we quote tweeted Brian's picture with the outfit.
That's awesome.
I have my mask on, and so no one can tell. So I have my mask on, so she's walking around, you know, thinking she's hot stuff, and she has to walk around with a guy that looks crazy the whole time.
Well, I see your point, but it's still a little risky. If some football fan crawls out of where we go, well, say what?
A little risky, I do agree.
Yeah, that is risky. All right, let's talk about some issues here. First of all, the baseball issue, and it appears there's going to be some movement. Now, I've been told that the owners are going to back off the 60 games and get to 66, and by Monday we may have an announcement of a season. Where do you stand right now with all the back and forth that you studied this whole time?
Well, I stand with the players. I mean, they want to play. They want to have an opportunity. They want to do all the things. I mean, really, the players want to get paid. That's the number one thing. They want to get paid. And so I stand with the players. These owners are billionaires. They can give up a little bit more this season and then try to recoup it next year. They can do that. I don't have a problem with that if I'm a billionaire. They just want games. Go out there and play the doggone games. Let the players get a couple more bucks this year and then try to find your money next year. Why would an owner have a problem with that?
Well, the owner doesn't want to pay more games than they think is necessary, which is why they wanted to put 48 on there. Now, here's my problem with this whole thing. The players, when they were going to impose the 48-game season, the players said, tell us when and where. And they were going to go, right? At least you got the idea. Well, okay. Now, all of a sudden, the owners want to go to 60 games. And then shouldn't that same tell us when and where still apply to the 60? Why would the players then balk at the 60?
Well, because it's a money thing, though. I mean, not because it's just more games. I think the players want more money, and so they're going to have to play more games. But it was kind of on their terms. And now that those terms have changed.
No, but it's still going to be on their terms. They're still going to get the prorated salary. The owners went to 60 games as a concession, right? The players seemed to be willing to play at 48 as long as the salaries were prorated. Now that 48 games and prorate their salary over 48 games, well, now it's going up to 60. So why would then the players say no still?
Well, is there a chance that you go from 60 to 75? I mean, they're saying, okay, we agree to 48, and now once we agree to 48, now you're trying to change it to 60. If we agree to 60, then maybe it goes to 75. It goes to a different number. You guys are trying to change the bullseye here just a little bit. I think if I'm a player, every time we agree to something, now you're changing it. And I would be upset. I would be fed up with that as well if I was a player. This is what we agreed upon, and now why are you changing that? Why are you trying to change that dynamic just a bit? I wouldn't be happy with that.
See, at this point, I think the players backed themselves into a corner. If they said, tell us when and where to a 48-game schedule, And the owners go, okay, let's make it 60 for that win and wear. And now all of a sudden they balk and they come back with, no. Let's play 70. We need to play 70 now to get full prorated pay. So they're changing the landscape too as they go along. And I'm pro player. I'd never want to be on the side of the owner. I'm pro player, but it seems to me that they're changing the landscape because they wanted more games. They were willing to play at 48. They wanted more games. So the owners went to 60 and now 60 wasn't good enough.
Yeah, it sounds like both sides are kind of trying to change the landscape just a little bit there. And so, you know, listen, at some point you're just going to have to say, this is what the answer is going to be. It's either going to be 60, whether it's going to be 70 or 48. As the owner, you're going to have to be able to say that, and now you have to go to the players and stick to that number.
Yeah.
To me, that's pretty simple. What's the holdup? Is that the only holdup, just the amount of games?
Mm-hmm.
Or to me, it feels like there has to be a money issue in there somewhere. I mean, it just has to be. It can't be just the number of games, because the number of games, as far as your money, won't change. It's prorated, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why would that change your thought process? You'll get more money if you go to 60. You'll go get more money if you go to 70.
Yeah, the owners don't want to go to 70. The owners don't want to pay out that kind of 70 game money, but they were willing to pay out the 60 game money. So if that's the best they're going to get, my point is that the players said yes to 48, which it appeared they did, well, then say yes to 60 and let's go.
Well, let me ask you this. Is it for the players, if 60 takes them into October or 60 takes them into a longer part, meaning the offseason will be a little bit shorter, is that an issue for the players?
They're going to be done the same time, right? So they would just wedge it. If they go 70, they're going to wedge it in through September 30th.
Well, if that's the case, then maybe they don't want to play as many doubleheaders. Maybe they want more space in between the games. Maybe they're saying their body may not be comfortable with playing that amount of games in that shorter period of time.
Mm-hmm.
That has to be the other issue.
Real fast, to your point, Mike, about the 48,
mm-hmm.
if they accepted the 48, they were going to file a grievance. Apparently there's language where they have to play as many games as possible.
Right.
I think part of why, now you're right, though, they may have to take the 60 and just take it, Mike. You're 100% right. But I think because of the timing, technically they can fit 70 games in safely before the September 27th. And technically, that would be the most possible. And apparently, at some point, the owners put in some language that said we would play as many games as, quote, possible.
Okay. And the grievance would come from that the players would allege that the owners did not negotiate in good faith.
Right.
And that would be the grievance on the 48 games. But here,
it sounds like both sides haven't negotiated in good faith.
No, they're playing with each other. They're playing a one-up game, a power game. And I get why, because this goes into the future and how the future dealings will happen. But here, the Major League Baseball proposal, once the owners came up with 60 games, the Major League Baseball Players Association came up with this. 70 games, full prorated play, spring training from June 26th, beginning June 26th, expanded playoffs to 16 teams in both this season and next season, minimum pool for playoff shares based on rounds played, $50 million if full playoffs are staged, a 50-50 split of incremental TV revenue, salary advance forgiveness for all players in Tier 1 to Tier 3 of the March agreement, $10 million for social justice initiatives, $15 million to be transferred from joint funds to the commissioner's discretionary fund, and so on and so on. Enhanced housing allowances in spring training and regular season, the universal designated hitter, blah, 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 blah. So, I don't understand why then, if the owners will agree to that, why can't we compromise and go 65, 66 games and get this thing done?
Well, it seems like at the end of the day, that's what it's going to come down to. You're going to have to compromise from both sides. But I think a lot of times in negotiation, I don't want to agree with what you propose, and you don't want to agree with what I propose, right? And so whatever you put on the table, I'm saying no to before we even start. That's just how negotiations have traditionally worked on a lot of different things. And unfortunately, this thing seems to be dragging on. But I think if it's going to come down to 60, 66 games or 50 games, I think it ends up getting done and they end up playing. Neither one, and tell me if I'm wrong here, do you think the owners, of course, they want to play. And I think the players want the money. So it will get done. But the number of games, of course, is going to be the issue, which obviously the whole fight is all about.
Yeah. All right. Let me switch gears on you, because I really want to get your opinion on what's going on now as far as concessions being made finally. But it looks like the white establishment towards the Black Lives Matter movement in sports. Politically correct racial dominoes, I'm calling it here, because it seems like every day somebody is making an effort. Now, let's take the issue, first of all. Tyrone, do we have the sound of Mike Gundy? I think that coach Mike Gundy, and we know what the controversy is. He wore the T-shirt, said OAN. Chuba Hubbard, his running back, was really offended by it, as were other African-American athletes at Oklahoma State. And Chuba said he's not going to have anything to do with the university until an apology is offered, until they straighten some things out down there. And this Gundy has been found like in previous years to have used the N-word. So he's in all kinds of trouble. And I want you to hear how he addressed this OAN situation.
I didn't know that some of the stances they had taken. I didn't know that. But then you look at it and say, okay, I was a I put the shirt on not knowing enough about the shirt. I understood exactly why the players got frustrated when they found that out, or whatever, however they found out what it was. I didn't know. I didn't know till the next day. Well, I knew that night, but I didn't confirm it till I did a little research. And I was like, so that was my fault. The way the players feel about me, and I upset them and broke their heart, that bothered me more than losing games. And that's the truth. But that's why now, that as humans, when we make mistakes, the only thing we can do is admit we're wrong, own up to it, be humble, accept critical people, criticism, make it better and move forward.
Okay. You just heard that. You probably heard it earlier this week. When you heard it, what was your reaction?
Well, I mean, the first part he was talking about, he didn't know any better. He didn't know what that news network stood for, and I don't believe that at all. It's just hard for me. If you watch and you support it enough to wear the T-shirt, it's hard for me to believe that you don't know what it stands for and the type of messaging that they have. You're wearing the T-shirt, especially in the climate. You understand? I mean, you have to understand what's going on in college football. It's the same thing in the NFL. 65% of the people playing in college football, probably on his team, are black players. And he understands the importance of Black Lives Matter movement. At this point, he understood what happened to George Floyd, and he still chose to wear that T-shirt that represents that news network. And to me, it sounds like he's trying to cover his butt and also win back the favor of the guys on his team. A big part of college football is recruiting. A big part of that is going out and into someone's home and saying, I'm going to take care of your kid and make sure that he's safe, and I want the best players in the country to come to my program. How can he do that if he supported that type of movement, especially if you're talking about some of the best players in the country happen to be African-American? So I think this is a coach trying to, first of all, save his job, save his relationships with his players, and also try to find a way to continue to get recruits to come to that school. That's what it sounds like to me when I hear it.
I'm shocked that this man is still employed. Because I'm thinking the same avenue that you're thinking about, the way he said, oh, I didn't know that, the issues. And then he said, I didn't know enough about the shirt. Well, earlier, he had made a statement about OAN that he watches it because they, quote-unquote, stick to the facts. Well, the one fact that he apparently didn't watch was that they called Black Lives Matter a farce. And so that's a fact, okay?
Right.
So when you put all this together, how does he still have his job?
Well, you know, I'm still surprised, like you, that he still has his job. There have been other people that have been fired for less, for sending out tweets, not wearing a T-shirt, but for sending out tweets at this point. So I'm still surprised that he has his job. I'm also surprised that the university hasn't come out and said that they're going to review the situation and then make a determination whether he's going to keep his job or not. I think he made a swift apology, so that may play a part of it just a bit. But, you know, at this point, if you're not sensitive to the movement, and you're started putting out or supporting brands or other people that are against the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, people have gotten fired. I'm surprised that Gundy still has his job there at Oklahoma State.
All right. Otherwise, do you feel a loosening of political correctness? The SEC, there are a couple things. Georgia will no longer play the Gone with the Wind theme at the end of games. Florida has eliminated the gator bait cheer. Mm-hmm. And so, like, these little dominoes are falling. How do you feel about where we're headed?
Real fast, there's one more. Mississippi can no longer get any SEC championship games in any sport until the state changes the flag.
That's nice, but it's not like University of Mississippi made that edict, right? They didn't decide that, right?
The SEC came out.
Oh, it was the SEC.
Track for any sport, they can no longer host any conference championships until the state changes the flag.
Okay, cool.
Well, here's the deal. I think that as minorities, we've asked for help. We've heard Roger Goodell. We've actually even heard our president, you know, and this may surprise a lot of people. We heard him come out and say that he thinks that Colin Kaepernick should get a job in the NFL as well, which is crazy to hear after what he said, you know, back in 2000.
Oh no, so, he may lose some support.
Yeah, you know, I think you'll be surprised at some of the things he said there. But I think that a lot of organizations, FCC, are trying to correct some of the things that have been wrong for a very long time. And I appreciate that. I appreciate the fact that they're going back and saying, we're going to look at everything. And I think Alshon is trying to change the name of some type of either a dorm or a building on the campus of South Carolina.
Yeah, Strom Thurmond.
I think that a lot of people are going back and examining all the things that we have built a lot of our culture on and saying, okay, is this right or wrong? And I appreciate that. And again, when I watch these protests, when I watch these rallies, when I watch all these different things that are going on, there are people, young people, that do not look like me, that's out there in the front of these things saying, we want to change because we don't want to live in a world like this. And I appreciate that. And all these things that are changing to make things fair, to make things equal. And some people are looking at it, okay, you know what? The black people are now, they're going to have the upper hand. That's not the situation. And that's not what black people are asking for. Black people are asking for just to be equal. Just treat us fair. Just treat us like everyone else. And if you can do that, then we'll be fine. We're not looking for the upper hand. We're looking to be treated fair. We're looking for equality. And if we can have that, then I think that we'll be happy as a people. And I think that there are people that are white that are saying, you know what? You should be treated fair. We don't want to oppress you. We don't want to treat you like you're slaves. We don't want you to be looked down upon. I want to work with you. I want to work next to you to support the movement. And I think we've seen that in a lot of the protests that we've had across our country for the last couple of weeks. And I appreciate that. And I'm grateful for that, because if black people could have changed this whole world, made these social injustices right, if they could have stopped police brutality, then we would have already done that, because that affects us the most. However, we don't have the power to do that. The people in charge, the white people, have the power to do that. And at this point, especially the young white people, and we have some older white people as well that are taking part in this, and they're saying, you know what? We don't want to be a part of that anymore. We want to make sure that everyone is treated equally. And I appreciate that. And I'm grateful for that. And I know there's a lot of people in the black community that are absolutely grateful for that. Now we want to continue to push forward to make sure that everyone is treated equally across the board. And I think that's what this whole movement is all about.
So it is accurate at this point to say that society is at least making an effort to be more enlightened.
It seems like it, yeah. Okay. It seems like certain parts of our society is absolutely making the effort to at least go back and look at everything and challenge everything to say, okay, is this aligned with what we believe in? If this doesn't align with what we believe in right now, 2020, then we're going to get rid of it and we're going to start new traditions. We're going to make sure that everyone in this world, black, white, and every other race, feels equal here, at least in the United States. And I think that that's a big step in the right direction.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. Your phone calls now, Brian Westbrook, on the Mike Missinelli Show after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
All right, 4:30. It's time to get up there. Our Twitter poll today, brought to us by Paul B. Moyer and Sons from Natalie at Natalie Eganoff.
Thanks, Mac. Today's poll has over 700 votes on it so far. With the latest coronavirus outbreak in Clearwater, are you less confident in the return to baseball? 78% say yes, 22% say no.
Yes, and the news, of course, there, in case you haven't heard it, eight personnel, five players, three other Phillies officials have tested positive for COVID down in Clearwater. And, you know, from what I've been talking to people who are down there, who pass that field all the time, there have been a lot of guys working out down there on those facilities at spring training.
That's that more numbers and not in a bubble.
Yes.
Leads to positive tests.
And there's the result of it. Eight and many more people have been tested now, so that number could increase.
Yeah, it's 32 tests.
32.
They're pending.
Wow. And some Toronto Blue Jays also are in Dunedin, and they probably correspond with these guys because it's right down the street.
Yeah,
according
to passing, they did. The player that tested positive absolutely did, and then there's some news on the screen for you, Mike.
Yes, I see this PGA golfer Nick Watney has tested positive for COVID-19. Now, as far as I know, he's not in this field that's playing this week, right?
No, he pulled out.
Oh, he was in it?
He was going to, and he pulled out.
He tested before. They tested them all before.
Okay,
so he didn't play. That tournament is going on down there, and
yeah, it's
in Hilton Head.
And the rumor is that there may have been more, but he has a bigger name. Like, he's somewhat of a name, and maybe some lesser guys may have also tested positive.
Yeah, Webb Simpson's leading that tournament. He's 12 under, and I was looking for our man, Tyrone, the Norristown native. Oh, Harry Higgs.
Yeah, born in Camden, allegedly. Well, he was born in Camden.
Harry Higgs is -3.
Okay.
However, the cut is -4. So, Harry, we won't see him no more.
No.
He's
man.
Out.
Oh, we won't see him.
And also, an interesting story here. That Brian will find this interesting here. At UCLA, apparently the UCLA football players, Brian, are demanding that a third-party health official be on hand because they apparently do not trust head coach Chip Kelly to act in their best interests.
I'll say this, and this is not just about Chip Kelly, because I think you can say a lot of things about Chip Kelly, but I think that players across the board should understand the coach's responsibility. The coach, you would think his responsibility would be to his players. A lot of coaches' responsibility is towards winning football games. And there was always questions about injuries in a locker room, whether the team doctor and the coach are in cahoots to try to get a player to play through an injury, right? And so you would have to kind of add this COVID-19 thing to that same list. I mean, just think about it. And let's use the Eagles. If Carson Wentz walks in there on Tuesday morning and he has some symptoms and they say, hey, you know what, you have COVID-19, what does that look like for Sunday? What does that look like for the next week? And, I mean, and for the entire football team? That's something that the Eagles, all professional sports are going to have to deal with. And first of all, from the medical staff, you have to have complete honesty, number one, and you would think that they would have a duty to do that, but I've been a part of a lot of places, and I've heard a lot of different stories, and there's not always honesty coming from the medical staff, and really that goes back to the culture of the organization. And if you remember what happened here in Philadelphia, a lot of people questioned Chip Kelly's culture and the way that he went about things, so I'm not surprised to hear that story.
Oh, poor Chip. They keep picking on him.
You know what, Mike? Let me ask you this, and I think it's actually even a bigger story than that. if these guys are going to be playing, I'm talking about the NFL at this point, and I'm talking about our Eagles. If these guys are going to be playing and then going home, right? Mm-hmm. They're not in the bubble. They're going home back to their home where they have wives and kids, and maybe the kids have been to school just because school is back in, and maybe the wife has been to the store, and, you know, and they have the potential to be exposed to this illness. At that point, what if it's one of the impact players? What if it's your left tackle? What if it's your quarterback? What if it's your star cornerback, Darius Slay? What happens then? I mean, the depth has to be a big part of the game plan just in case something happens, not just an injury, but an illness that's going to keep you out a couple weeks that may be contagious to other players on your team. If you're a coach, you have to be thinking
There's no question about that. And of course, yesterday we were talking about Dr. Anthony Fauci saying the second wave is going to come back. And if the second wave comes back, it'll be very unrealistic until you can play a football season. So what would happen? Would you start it? You play eight games? You have to stop it again? Like, that mess that would happen.
Well, it depends what players get it. I mean, if we're talking about, you know, the 52nd and 53rd player on the team.
That's not going to matter. Yeah, to replace that guy. Yeah.
But if you're talking about, you know, those key positions, wide receiver, a quarterback, defensive end, cornerback, if those things start to pop up, then, you know, Roger Goodell, the team owners, and they're going to have meetings. And I think the players at this point who have more power now than they ever have, probably because of the whole George Floyd situation and the Black Lives Matter and the entire movement, who have more power than they've ever had, they'll start speaking up like, it's not safe for me. I mean, I can't imagine my ability to go to an organization, go to a facility, and have that disease that may be circulating around in that facility and bring it back home to my family. I remember I was sick back when I was playing. I probably had a flu or some type of illness. And as soon as the Andy Reid found out that I was sick, he sent me home. And I'm talking about, I didn't practice all week. He sent me home all week long because he doesn't want the team to be, you know, sick just like me. And I'm talking about maybe a common cold or the flu.
Yeah.
This COVID-19 is going to be much worse. And I have to imagine there will be a player or two or 10, 15 that's going to be, you know, diagnosed with it. And at that point, the team is going to have to start making some major decisions.
I want to get a call in here before we get to the next break. And one of the things we're talking about today is, of course, Father's Day is Sunday. So a lot of people have been telling stories about their dad. And I'm curious, I want to ask you the question, the best thing your dad ever did for you, the thing that resonates with your dad. Because obviously he had a big influence on where you are as a man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'll say this, and I'll just start. I'm 40 years old, and my dad, and I'm using, you can't see me, but I'm using the air quotes right now. He works for me. And so he's down at the farm every single day, feeding the horses, cleaning stalls, and doing different things. And because of this whole COVID-19, we've been here in Maryland for the last 3 months, 3.5 months. And I've gotten to spend every single day with my dad, literally every single day, however long he wants to stay. He's supposed to be there for 8 hours. We certainly pay him for 8 hours. He may be there for 2-3 hours a day. But for whatever time he's there, I've had an opportunity to hang out with my dad. And just sometimes we're just sitting around shooting the crap for a couple hours. And other times we're out digging holes and, you know, putting in fences and things like that. To me, this has been the best part of the entire COVID-19. Of course, spending time with my family, but more importantly, spending time with him every single day, just hanging out and being father and son. And really, for me, I'm also looking at how that relationship with my father has affected my relationship with my son. And so I've enjoyed that a lot. But when I'm talking about the past, when I was younger, he taught me that killer instinct. He gave me that idea that you are shooting for perfection. And you shouldn't be satisfied until you get that. He gave me the quote that, what is it? Never stop till your good is better and you're better. Never rest until your good is better and your better is best. I mean, you must stay hungry. Stay hungry every single day. Be humble and stay hungry. And it's that attitude, that thought process, that chip on your shoulder every single day that makes you want to go out there and work. That was given to me by my father. Who was a multi-sport athlete. He was drafted out coming out of high school. He's in his college's Hall of Fame, football and baseball as well. So, you know, it was a learned response for me, a learned behavior, and I certainly appreciate him. But I think even more importantly, as a man, I appreciate the time that he invested in me. I mean, I hear a lot of crazy story about guys not having their father around or their father's working too much to be involved with them. But I appreciate my father being my coach in football, baseball, and basketball, every one of those sports. The time that he invested into me really has made all the difference in the world as far as my lifestyle.
That's good stuff. Let me get a call in before we get to a break. Jeff, one of the salesmen hanging for a long time. Jeff, you got a dad story?
Yeah, I do. I'm the guy that gave you the inside scoop on Masher from Shenandoah.
Oh, okay.
That guy. So,
you called the snitch line.
That's exactly what I did.
You gave me the Masher info.
Yeah. What did you say?
Never mind. As my Siri went off. I'm sorry. I didn't say anything. It was Siri. Okay. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, I was. My father was not the greatest dad, but I wanted so badly because back in the mid '60s, I loved Cassius Clay, and he hated him. And I wanted so badly to go to the pay-per-view of Cassius Clay, Sonny Liston. It was at the Allentown Fairgrounds, February 25th, 1964. It was freezing, but I scraped together enough money, and the tickets were $12 a piece. This is 1964. And he wouldn't take me. He said it was too expensive, and I was a paper boy, so I saved up, and I actually asked customers for tips. I remember giving a quote, said, I want to go to this fight, and they would actually gave me some money, and I learned there that you got to ask.
Yeah.
So anyway, that scene is seared in my mind my entire life. I'm 67. I mean, this is a tent, a giant tent. There was hundreds of people there. Everybody was smoking. You could hardly see the screen. And when Sonny Liston didn't come out in the seventh round, my dad was so mad, and I was so happy. But
that's really interesting. So let me ask you this, and this is you don't have to answer if you don't want. Do you think that his dislike of Muhammad Ali was racially oriented?
Oh, 100%.
It was because of the Nation of Islam and all that.
My dad was a very paranoid, racist person. Okay, and.
What's really interesting about the reason I asked that is because Sonny Liston was an ex-con, and it's amazing how some white people back then felt more threatened by Muhammad Ali than they did for Sonny Liston. And then that, of course, that was enhanced when Frazier came along, who became the white people's choice over Ali.
Because Muhammad Ali outwardly expressed contrarian thoughts. He challenged the system.
Yes.
And that
threatened white people.
Going on now.
Yeah.
Trying to challenge the system.
Yeah. Right. All right. Let's take a break. We'll come back. 610-622-0975. On the other side, Brian, very disrespectful to me this week. I got a picture texted to me, and Brian got the same picture.
Uh huh.
From Jenna Wolf.
Oh, okay.
I'll tell the story on the other side.
Oh, that'd be good.
My man Brian would throw me a compliment. Nah.
Oh, man.
All right, we're back after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
.448, Mike Missinelli Show. Brian Westbrook's with us till 5 o'clock today on a Father's Day weekend. It's also Juneteenth. So, interestingly enough, Mr. Westbrook always has my back. I can always count on him to have my back. So, Jenna Wolf and I worked together for a couple years at WB17.
I remember those
sports
days.
Sports compadres.
Yeah.
And we got to be buds. And, of course, Jenna went on to national acclaim. And I stayed here. So we've been recently in touch with each other, saying, hey, what's up? What are you doing? All that kind of stuff. So she sends out a picture to me and Brian the other day of Jenna and I out at some function. And we somebody took a picture of us. It was in her file, so she sent it out. So she sends out to Brian and I, and she goes, look what I found. And she goes, I looked 12, which she did. She really looks young.
She looks really young, yeah.
And so Brian tweets it. He answers right away. He goes, wow, 3 exclamation points. This is a great picture, 2 exclamation points. Jenna, you look so happy, 2 exclamation points. That smile hasn't changed, 3 exclamation points. And Mike, ... Well, you tried your best. My man, he's always got my back.
I think you look exactly the same.
Yeah, you look the same, Mike. You look, I mean, it was younger.
I had the different glasses on. I had the frameless ones.
But you really, I mean, your face is still the same. Your hair, I mean, your hair's a little long now.
Not according to Brian.
Well, listen, if your friends can't make fun of you, then who can? The reason why our friendship works is because I'm not kissing your butt.
You have never kissed my butt. One peck. I'm yearning for one peck somewhere along the line.
That's why we're still friends to the day. That's my
I introduce you. What do? I call you the great number 36. You think I can get sugar ever?
Well, that's amongst mixed company. When we're amongst mixed company, yeah. I always say Mike is great. Whether I believe it or not, I always say Mike is great and all these good things. Remember that appearance we went to, and I went on and on and on for 10 minutes about how great you are, and it was awesome. But when we're talking about
I must have been out of the room.
When that happened.
I have no recollection of that.
You don't remember that one time that happened. You don't remember that. It was a great time. But
I'll take your word for it.
Give you a hard time.
I got you. All right, let's go. Dave in Center City. Dave, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Dave.
Hey, happy Father's Day to everyone.
You too, Dave.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, thank you. You know, I always love my mama. She's my favorite girl. But your dad is your best friend, and he was your dad. That's your pal. And I know Corp Tyrone lost his dad. And his father-in-law, so hang in there.
Yeah, he lost his mom. His dad is still with us. Yeah.
Oh, dad's still with us?
Dad's still with us. I've been trying to get him on the air.
Oh, yeah. Brian Westbrook, are you ready for a six-pack of questions, my friend?
Absolutely. Let's go.
Will the Eagles win the Lombardi Trophy this year?
No, they will not.
Will Jay Wright ever be the head coach of the Sixers?
That's a good question. It seems to me that Jay wants to stay at Villanova. I think there would be a lot of pressure for him to win. And college basketball is way different, especially the way that Jay coaches it, is way different than the NBA. I think he stays at Villanova. Okay.
In Villanova, baseball, basketball, 2021, pull a double title. They're both knocking on the door. Yes or no?
Yes, I wouldn't be surprised if I saw that. I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm sorry.
Excellent.
Yeah, Brian, I'm sorry. Football, basketball.
Football. Yeah. Okay, no problem. Mark Ferranti and that football team, Jay Wright and that basketball team have a great chance of both winning.
Two national championships?
Really?
All right. Okay, we'll pay attention to that.
Brian, Darryl Bubba Wallace having a breakout year as a NASCAR driver. I love this guy. I've played cards with him at the campgrounds at Pocono. He's driving the iconic Richard Petty STP car. What is the number of that car, Brian?
I have no clue. The only thing I know about Bubba Wallace is flag. And other than that, I wouldn't be able to tell you a thing about
number, number 43. Two more questions. Will Donald Trump win a second term?
You know, I think he will. I mean, I'm not going to say who I'm voting for, but I certainly think that he will.
And finally, on a clear day at Marion, no Nationals, no skins, straight up golf match. Who wins? B. West or Mikey Miss? I love you guys.
Well,
Mike has told me about his golf game. Recently,
I stink recently.
And he hasn't been very good.
I stink. The only shot I have to beat you, I don't know what your number is these days. I will hit it straighter than you.
Yes, you will.
You will scramble more than I will.
Yeah, and once I find my ball amongst the trees and pine cones and everything else, I'll try to salvage a hole here and there.
Yes, you will. You'll hit it harder and probably further, but you'll spray it more than I will.
There's no doubt about that.
All right, man. Listen, you have a great weekend at the farm, and I'm really jealous. You know, do that Yellowstone thing. All right.
I appreciate that. Happy Father's Day to you and all the dads out there. Thank you for being fathers, and I appreciate that.
All right, Brian. Have a good weekend. Happy Father's Day as well. All right. Dave played cards with Bubba Wallace.
Of course he did.
These things come out of out of the blue.
Does anything surprise you with him anymore?
Wallace is a good dude. We played cards in the pit.
Yeah.
I don't know whether to say, like, oh, you really? Or go, yeah, come on, man. Like, I have no idea with Dave.
I don't know either.
All right. The 5 o'clock hour is ahead. 610-632-0975. Two lines are open. Dad stories to close out this week as we go into Father's Day weekend. Be really nice. Back after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.